Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Guilty on all counts, Donald Trump, the first holder of the office of US President to receive a criminal conviction. He's been found guilty of 34 counts of falsifying business records in the first degree in a case that centred around how hush money payments to the porn star Stormy Daniels were classified. "I'm a very innocent man," he told his supporters, and he told the press outside the case that the case was rigged and he's fighting for our constitution.
"This was a disgrace. This was a rigged trial by a conflicted judge who was corrupt. This was a rigged, disgraceful trial. The real verdict is going to be November 5th by the people. And they know what happened here, and everybody knows what happened here. You have a Soros-backed DA and the whole thing. We didn't do a thing wrong. I'm a very innocent man. And it's okay. I'm fighting for our country. I'm fighting for our Constitution. Our whole country is being rigged right now. This was done by the Biden administration in order to wound or hurt an opponent, a political opponent. And I think it's just a disgrace. And we'll keep fighting. We'll fight till the end and we'll win. And we will fight for our Constitution. This is long from over. Thank you very much."
Well, for more, we're joined now by Terry Sheridan, news director at WSHU Public Radio, and Natasha Lindstad, who's professor of government at the University of Essex. So, Terry, that guilty verdict, we know the sentencing is due in about 5 weeks' time on the 11th of July. It's possible that he could serve time behind bars, but most analysts are saying that's not the likely outcome of that sentencing hearing.
That's absolutely right. I mean, again, yes, he could face 4 years in prison, but this is a white-collar crime. Donald Trump is a first-time convicted person. So by usual standards, he would either receive probation, he could receive a fine, or any other penalty that Judge Merchan deems appropriate within the standards. But it is very unlikely that he will serve any jail time.
Other impacts of this now, he can still vote, can't he, because he's a resident in Florida. Explain to us how that works.
I mean, again, that's one part of the federal system that we have, where rules in one state may or may not apply to another state. So, again, Florida allows felons to vote, convicted felons to vote. So he still has the right to vote. And he also has the right to run for president. There is nothing in the U.S. Constitution that says he can't.
What are people saying about how he was after the case? We know that he closed his eyes as those verdicts were being read out and he repeatedly said no. But then when he came out to face the cameras, the words were bullish, but he looked shaken. Would you agree?
Yes, I would agree with that. You know, again, it was the typical Donald Trump message. The message that he's been giving, you know, since this he was first indicted, since he got through his impeachments, whatever, that this is rigged. The judge is corrupt, conflicted. The jury is corrupt and conflicted, again, without any evidence. But his body language spoke that, to be polite, that it wasn't a good day for him.
Mm-hmm. If he's reelected as president, will he be able to pardon himself?
No, because this is a state charge in the state of New York. So he has no authority over anything criminal in the state of New York. So, no, this one he would not be able to pardon himself, nor, for instance, another case in Georgia, which is a state case. He couldn't pardon himself if he was convicted in that one.
So you mentioned the Georgia case. There are three others as well. This was one of four criminal cases that he's facing. But those other three, they're not likely to play out before the November election. Is that right?
That's right, because Donald Trump's legal strategy, and it appears to be successful, is to file motions to delay, to delay, to delay, so that he can get past the election. It's also questionable whether he has the right to pardon himself, even on the federal charges. That has never been done. This is a unique situation, and whether a person can pardon themselves is still to be tested.
Now, what about the overall reaction to all of this in the hours since the verdict was delivered? I saw Carl Bernstein, the journalist and commentator, saying it's like pouring gasoline on a fire that's already burning. Would you characterize it in the same way?
I don't know if I would characterize it this way, but yes, it has inflamed his base. It has inflamed the right-wing media on that hand. But That was already set. People who are against Donald Trump already, it doesn't change their view of him. What it does do is have maybe a slight impact in the middle. People who lean conservative but personally don't like Donald Trump, who may change their mind. Now, again, this is a tight election. So even if in a few key states, tens of thousands of people change their mind, this could have an effect on the election.
Okay, Terry, thank you very much. Terry Sheridan there from WSHU Public Radio. As I said, Natasha Lindstad is with us too, Professor of Government at the University of Essex. Natasha, what do you see are the political implications of Donald Trump now being a convicted felon?
It's a really interesting question because the polls thus far have been a little bit all over the place. There were some polls that were suggesting that it wasn't going to make much of a difference. And it's important to note that more than half of the American public was not paying attention to this case. They were not watching on TV. But now that we have a verdict, this could lead to a little bit of some movement here. There was a poll, I should mention, a Quinnipiac University poll last month that found that even among Trump supporters, 6% said that they would be less likely to vote for him if he were convicted. And we have some YouGov polls just taken 3 hours after the results showed that 50% do agree with the outcome. And I think that it's right to say that there could be some movement in the margins here. And this is incredibly important in swing states because Americans are going to have to ask themselves, do you want to vote for someone who wouldn't be able to get a job at a local shopping mall? To work at a local store, they wouldn't be able to get a job at a local store for the highest office of the land. And I think that amongst those that are undecided or on the fence or not sure, that this conviction may sway them that, you know what, at least at the very least, I might not vote for him, or I'm not going to vote for anyone, or I'm not going to show up, period. Mm-hmm. But it's not going to be good for Trump because his base is already there for him. And that wasn't going to change regardless of the conviction or not.
Well, those voters who you mentioned, and Terry talked about them too, those ones in the margins, the soft support, the people who are conservative but maybe not happy about having to vote Trump but decided that they would because he fits their ideology. They're the people who are going to decide this election, aren't they? Because it's so tight.
Right. They matter as well as those that are just undecided. And so Trump won the 2016 election by really motivating his base. His base came out to vote, whereas the Democratic base didn't come out to vote as well. But he lost the election by these very slim margins in these swing states. And so it's a matter, of course, the Democrats are going to have to get their base to come out, their people that traditionally support them to come out. But they'll also need to sway, as you mentioned, some of these people who could be moved one way or the other. And this type of conviction, though, of the four cases, this to the American public was the least important. He was found guilty on all 34 counts. And this is a felony. There's, as you mentioned, no U.S. president has ever been convicted of a felony before. And this may be enough to impact, even just a few percentage points would make a difference.
Mm-hmm. It's not likely to shift support for him within the Republican Party. And I'm talking about the big beasts of the Republican Party now, because they need him. They have no other option here apart from Donald Trump in this presidential election.
That's right. And it's going to be really interesting to see what happens at the Republican National Convention. It's going to be held a few days after the sentencing, which is on July 11th. And I would think this is just going to be a little bit more chaotic now. There may be some of these never Trump voices that are going to get louder that may see that he's just too big of a risk, even though he does have a very authoritarian grip on the party. Will there be a little bit more signs of disunity, which up to this point, you know, Republicans have been falling in line behind him?
Mm, and they have all fallen in line. So where would that never Trump loud voice come from, do you think, or do you expect?
I mean, it's hard to say, because even those that you thought would never vote for Trump, like Nikki Haley, who ran against him, and towards the end she was really critical of him. She said, yeah, I'll vote for Trump. And his former attorney general, Bill Barr, who was very critical of him. Mm-hmm. He said he's going to vote for Trump. So there's really been very few, apart from like Liz Cheney, a former House member and U.S. House member, and Mitt Romney, a senator from Utah, who said, you know, they wouldn't vote for him. The voices in the Republican Party are pretty limited, not that many. But it's hard to know because behind the scenes, some of these court cases have revealed that many Republicans really detest him, don't like him at the elite level. And they're just too afraid of the base to actually say this. So I wonder if this might gain some momentum to speak out and to be honest about the way they feel about this, this type of candidate.
Something that may play out in the days and weeks ahead. Last night, our time, the prosecutor, Alvin Bragg, in this case, gave a press conference in light of the verdict. And as he was leaving the room, he was asked if he fears what might happen to him if Trump is elected in November, Natasha. Now, he elected not to answer that question. He walked away. Do you think, though, there's a major issue here, big questions for the institutions of the state considering this conviction and what Trump has been saying in response to it?
I think the U.S. public is already incredibly polarized about our institutions, particularly our justice institutions and the Supreme Court, as Trump appointed three judges who were going to do whatever he wanted them to do, has probably one of the lowest approval ratings it's had in my lifetime. So he has rattled our democratic institutions. He shattered democratic norms. And in particular, our justice system is turned out where you've got one side of the American public that maybe agrees with a result and another side that completely disagrees with it. And instead of saying, well, I don't agree with the result, but I believe in our institution, you have more and more Americans that not only do they not agree with the results, but they don't trust our judicial institutions. We're really seeing attacks on the way the rule of law works and people's faith in that. And you can see that Trump perpetuates this kind of thing by coming out and saying this was a disgrace and, you know, that this was a complete witch hunt. He's an authoritarian populist. He sees himself as above the law. And he said, well, the verdict is going to come in November. That's not how it works. You can't be saved by the people when you're facing the justice system. But he thinks he can manipulate voters to save him. He's perpetuating these types of norms that are very dangerous for democracy.
He's already using this conviction, though, isn't he, to try and drum up more support and try and raise more funds. The emails were flying out to his supporters last night.
And I'm sure he will raise more funds. I mean, amongst his base, I mean, they're willing to buy, you know, $45 Bibles, or even though they already have a Bible, they're willing to do whatever he needs to pay for his legal funds, even though he's supposedly some sort of billionaire. This is where he really has a lot of expertise. He's able to communicate with his base in such a way to always portray himself as both a hero, their hero, and the world's biggest victim. And he's going to use it to his advantage the best that he can. It's going to work with the base, but I cannot imagine it's going to work with everybody.
Did you see him last night when he emerged from court? I was just talking to Terry about it. Like, the words were there, but the appearance was... I'd never seen him look like that before. I thought he looked really shaken.
He definitely looked like a shell of his normal self, where he's a very robust person that yells and loudly whatever comes to his mind and always seems to be really full of energy. He did seem like he'd been punched in the gut, that maybe he wasn't expecting this outcome, because he's always been able to evade legal repercussions thus far, at least on the criminal level. And he had some civil cases that didn't go his way, of course, recently. But he did seem pretty shaken by this. He knows that this is not going to be good, though he may project it some kind of different viewpoint. I think you're absolutely right that he seemed completely shaken by this result.
All right. Well, let's see how it plays out over the course of the next little while. Natasha, thank you very much for joining us. Natasha Lindstad there from the University of Essex, and Terry Sheridan, who we heard from a little earlier.